Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York and KPFA in Berkeley, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Kata Mesta and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. Our DC editor is Mitch Jeserich. The technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Million, and Lindsay Benedict. FSRN is a worker-run collective, and for more information, visit our website at www.fsrn.org. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Free Speech Radio News is made possible in part by an underwriting grant from the Graduate Student Organization at Stony Brook University. This edition of Free Speech Radio News will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Well, the time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time for another edition of Off the Wall. And I think we'd all agree that you have to take the good with the bad. And you can't always present the best of what you want to present. Sometimes you have to present the worst of what you want to present just to sort of even it out a little bit. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the tribute to Tommy Chong that we're doing over the last few weeks and I guess the next bunch of months until he is released from prison for the ultimate crime of selling bongs on the Internet. But we're playing pieces from Cheech and Chong over the... I guess, course of their career. And so far, we've been pretty good as far as the kinds of things that we've been playing. But sometimes you come across something that, I don't know, I guess just didn't age well or something, or never was that funny to begin with. But then again, you know, it's all subjective. This is my opinion. I happen to think this piece is awful, but who am I to judge? I'll just press the button, and we'll listen to another piece from... Tommy Chong, years past, with Cheech Marin, as he languishes in prison. As Tommy Chong, that is, languishes in prison. We'll have some more information on that as well. And the rest of the program here on Off the Wall.
Mr. Stromberg, is it?
Yes, Doctor, Mr. Stromberg.
And what seems to be your problem, sir?
Doctor, it's not my problem. It's my son, Jaime. He's acting like an animal. Get down off there, Jaime! Get down off the doctor! Here, come over here! Sit. That's good boy. He's biscuit.
Well, Mr. Stromberg, there is a very good veterinarian down the hall if
listen,
you care.
Listen, doctor. Don't misunderstand me. It's not that problem. The problem is his nose.
Well, I see that. However, Mr. Stromberg, I'm not a plastic surgeon.
No, doctor. That's not the problem at all again. Listen very carefully. Ever since he was a little boy, everything he's finding around the house, he sticks up his nose. Everything that's laying around the house, up his nose it goes. He started out small, first it was maybe a piece of rice, a bean, a jujube. Then he got bigger and bigger, a walnut, a peanut. Then he started on change, first it was a penny, a nickel, a quarter, a half dollar, silver dollars. He's got four knocks up his nose. Listen!
Well, that is rather musical. Perhaps you can use him as a maraca.
Listen, doctor, jokes I don't need. What I need is a normal little boy who don't stick every toy I get him up his nose. Trains and boats and planes he's got up his nose. Everything he goes up his nose, I can believe it, doctor. And last week, a whole bagel with lox and cream cheese. I ask him, what, your toy's hungry maybe or something? How about some olives? Oh, doctor, I'm going out of my mind. But last night was the topper of all the toppers. I'm coming home from work. I work hard, let me tell you, doctor. I don't mind telling you I work hard, but not for me. For my wife, for my family, not one thought about me. Everything's for them. I'm coming home. I'm going in the kitchen, maybe have a little glass tea. And out in the alley, I'm hearing a noise. So I'm saying to myself, what this noise? Could it be burglar? Yes, it could be burglar. So I'm getting my gun. Doctor, let me tell you, I don't like to carry gun. But today, you can go out on the street without the Yankees and the Schwarzers getting you. So I'm looking at my gun. And I'm noticing inside my gun are no bullets. Where are the bullets, I'm asking myself? Where else? Up his nose. So we get the kid out of the bed, showing off the bullets are in his nose. How are we going to get them out? They're stuck in there. We can't get the bullets out. We give him whole Dr. Brown's cream soda, stand him on his head, shake him up and down. Nothing but foam all over. So, doctor, I'm coming to you, and I'm begging, I'm pleading, please get the bullets out of his nose, please.
Well, I'll see what I can do. Come here, son. Come here. Come on, up here. There we go. Well, let me see. Nurse, hand me those pliers. Thank you. They are wedged in here pretty tight, aren't they? Well, let me see. Hand me that hammer. Thank you, nurse.
Doctor, you did it! Everything's out of his nose! Doctor, thank you! And listen, doctor, keep the change.
Okay, well, it was 1973 when that came out. I don't know if that makes a difference, I don't know if that's an excuse, but, yeah, Cheech and Chong there, he still shouldn't be in prison, okay? No matter how bad that was. And maybe you thought it was good. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only person that thinks it was bad. But they have a lot of good material out there, and we're going to continue playing that as well as the bad material, too, because we're going to run out, you know? He's going to be in prison for so long that by the time he gets out, I think we will have played everything that we're allowed to play over the airways, because there are a few pieces we can't play, unfortunately. And, yeah, they happen to be the funniest ones. Tommy Chong, according to one of our listeners, reported for his 9-month sentence on October 9th. He has an appeal hearing on the 15th, which I imagine has already taken place. And I haven't heard anything, so I imagine he wasn't released. His lawyers were asking that they release him while they appeal the case. So if we find out more information about that, we'll certainly let people know. And we're going to be taking a little bit more of a tour. Today we're going to be in Poland. This is the picture tour that we have arranged to our internet listeners and people who just want to listen over the internet later, or people who just like the sound of me describing pictures over the radio. We'll have a few more pictures today from my recent 6-week trip overseas, this time a few days in Poland, wandering around some rather interesting sights. Here's some letters, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com. You can also call us, 631-632-WUSB. Probably be taking phone calls a little bit later. This person writes in saying, I just finished the photo tour. I got to say, I really enjoyed it. As a resident here in Amsterdam, I want to tell you what I know about the red car. A few weeks ago, we showed some small cars. Not the smart car. This is a really tiny car. We tend to joke and say it's for handicapped people. It has a lawnmower engine, seats two with no trunk space to speak of. It's generally required to drive in the bike lane, as many wheelchairs do as well. It goes about as fast as a bike. I've never been able to make out the brand name. That's, again, not the smart car. That's the car that we had a picture of a few weeks ago. It was parked in back of a bus, and just really bizarre, really tiny and small. You see those in Amsterdam. I haven't seen them anyplace else, but thanks, Mark, in Amsterdam, for writing in with that information. This person suggests we visit the following URL, www.microcarmuseum.com/tour/smart.html. This guy has an unhealthy fascination with microcars and has at least one in his museum. The website, microcarmuseum.com, he made a fortune in it looks like it says cookies and candy. I don't know if you can make a fortune doing that, but I guess you can. That finances this museum. Not only is it free, but we left with tons of cookies and candy. Okay, that sounds pretty interesting. I guess it's a real site as well as an online site. I guess this is in Georgia, based on this person's email address. Go to microcarmuseum.com and figure out how to get down to Georgia and get some free cookies and candy as well. This person writes in from London. I was sorry to hear about the different smart cars they're going to be releasing in the U.S. Yes, as you may recall, we did a little investigation and discovered that they will be releasing smart cars in this country, I think, in 2006. but the smart car bears little resemblance to the ones that are driving around in Europe now, the tiny two-seat ones. Here, they will be huge, as big as any other car, so it's kind of loses the whole point. You can see what smart cars look like by going to www.smart.com. That's what people are driving in Europe, and it's really kind of cool. Here's a link to a badly designed smart car site, which comes tantalizingly close to telling you how to import a real one. www.angelfire.com/F. Is that an L or a 1? It's really hard to tell on the printout. It's either FL4 or F14. So either one of those. /smartcarUSA. See, when it comes in on email, you just click on it and you're connected. It doesn't matter what it says, but when you read it out over the air, you have to know what it says, and I don't. Anyway, this person advises us to look at the entries around the beginning of 2002. That's from Russell in London. Thank you for that letter. This person writes in, I was wanting to cruise in a smart car myself and heard about your experiences in Europe. I, too, love the idea of a simple form of transportation for little money. A company called Feel Good Cars is releasing an old car, a Renault Dauphine, updated with an electric motor similar to what is found in a forklift. That's right. I recently received word that they are also opening up a dealership in the U.S. featuring the new Zen, Zero Emission, Zero Noise. Doesn't really spell Zen, though, does it? A two-seater, cost about $13,000. The website is www.feelgoodcars.com. And that's from Barbara over in, looks like, Toronto. Thank you very much for that letter as well. This person writes in, I want to say I'm a long-time listener both to this show and Off the Hook, Brain Damage 2, since you digitized them. And yes, we do have 2 more years of Brain Damage to digitize. But, boy, there's just been so many digitization projects lately. You just don't want to even hear the beginning of this. Hopefully one day I'll see the end of it. But yes, 2 more years of Brain Damage, 1988 and 1989, still have yet to be captured and put up on the Internet. And that will come someday soon, hopefully. Well, not soon, but someday in the next few months. Anyway, I've also read 2600 for many, many years. I generally enjoy and appreciate your personal attitude of tolerance and inclusion. Uh-oh. You sense a butt coming? I've always found it refreshing, especially in the hacker community, which I have found to be largely elitist in general. Well, yes, there are elitists in the hacker community. Usually the ones who speak the loudest, too. I find it easier to ignore the people who speak the loudest. I don't know, a lot of people have difficulty doing that. I have no problem ignoring people who are speaking loudly. Of course, that gets me in trouble with cops sometimes, but it's a good skill to try to pick up. Anyway, it is with some surprise, however, or as a however, not a but it's close enough, that I have noticed your continued intolerance, evidenced by your tirades against SUV owners. If I continued, I refer to the 2 programs in the last few months where you loosed your venom. Oh, but I like to loose my venom. I mean, what good is having venom if you can't loose it, you know? Anyway, I purchased an SUV for my wife. It's a GMC Denali, whatever the hell that word means. A very large vehicle, okay? It gets, on the average, 33 miles per gallon, not the 10 you mentioned on your last program. I mention this because I want to point out that there are indeed legitimate reasons to own such a vehicle. First of all, buses, trucks, and vans in the same size class have operated as long as there have been motor vehicles. They pose the same hazards you have outlined with regards to being large and tall and opaque. Well, actually, I got to step in to counter these points because there are a lot of points here. Okay, first of all, SUVs, gas mileage or whatever. Let me refer to a little article here. I found this on KGO TV in San Francisco. If you own an SUV, chances are you're not getting 20 miles per gallon. Now, that's the first sentence of this story. This person claims to be getting 33 miles per gallon. Great, okay, you found one that can get 33 miles per gallon. But if you own an SUV, according to basically all the news and research that I've looked into so far, odds are you're not getting 20 miles per gallon. But believe it or not, and this is something that you probably would be enthusiastic about, some engineers say SUVs can and should be getting 40 miles per gallon. They say it's not technology that's lacking, it's the will. And when it comes to SUVs, many buyers believe bigger is better. But what about fuel efficiency? A few SUVs exceed 20 miles per gallon. Some struggle to get 12. So we're not too far from my 10, are we? Anyway, there's been all kinds of backlash against that. It's a television ad that even accuses owners of fueling terrorism by owning SUVs. I didn't go that far. But environmentalists are now renewing their call for better gas mileage. John DeSico with Environmental Defense, based in Detroit. Today's typical SUV can be improved from an average of 20 miles per gallon to 40. All the pieces to improve efficiency that much really do exist. Materials exist to make bodies lighter yet safe. The BMW's Z8, sold in Europe, is made of aluminum. Used in an SUV, the material could cut the weight by a third and boost fuel economy by 5%. Smarter transmissions would also help. A German company, ZF, makes one that cuts fuel consumption by 15%. There are no gears. When you accelerate, the engine speed is continually adjusted to achieve the most efficient RPM. Another advance is regenerative braking, which can be found in new gas-electric hybrids. Now, environmentalists admit that that's progress. They fear without a big legislative push, automakers will stall in adapting cutting-edge technology, just like they once resisted seatbelts and airbags. And that's where the problem is. Looking back at an article dated August 2nd, 2001, in a big win for automakers, and, you know, this is explaining why I loose my venom against this whole thing. That's one of the reasons. But listen to this. In a big win for automakers, the U.S. House of Representatives refused to require sport utility vehicles to meet the same higher gasoline mileage requirements as passenger cars in the next 6 years. That was August of 2001. The fuel efficiency provision was part of broad-ranging energy legislation, wrapped into one package to implement much of the Bush administration's energy plan. Lawmakers rejected by a wide margin an amendment that would have forced Detroit to improve the fuel efficiencies of SUVs, minivans, and light trucks from the current 20.7 miles per gallon to 27.5 by 2007. There's just no persuasive argument against raising fuel standards, said Republican Representative Sherwood Volert of New York, who sponsored the provision. It's the simplest, most basic conservation step available to us. Opponents, however, said the higher fuel requirements would force automakers to build lighter, unsafe vehicles. Don't kill Americans with this amendment, warned Republican Representative Billy Talzin of Louisiana, who happens to be the chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Now, Representative Heather Wilson, another Republican from New Mexico, gave an emotional plea against raising the fuel standards and recalled how she believed her life was saved in an accident because she was driving a heavy SUV. What happened to the other guy, I wonder? You see, that's the problem. People are driving tanks on the road. And, you know, it takes a lot of gas to power a tank. Now, people say that these things are safe because they're able to survive crashes, which they tend to get into a lot of, I think. But there are other cars on the road, and that's the problem, that they don't seem to be aware of this. What happens when, you know, a Toyota Corolla hits a Jeep Cherokee? You know? What happens to that car? So, continuing with this letter. Sorry about the aside there, but I think it was all pretty relevant. In our case, we own 3 German Shepherds. We also own property in Vermont near Killington, where we go during the winter to enjoy snowboarding at least every other week. In addition, my wife is an architect. To that end, she drives to construction sites, hauls materials, fixtures, and furniture on a regular basis, and spends 40% of her time at work in her vehicle. Well, great, but I guarantee you, all the SUVs out there, all the dozens, hundreds I've seen today alone, very few of those people are architects. Most of them are single drivers driving empty SUVs on their way down to Price Club to get a one-year supply of ho-hos or something. You don't need them for this kind of a thing. And people should be discouraged from buying these heavy terrain vehicles just to go down to 7-Eleven. I mean, maybe if you live in Minnesota or Wyoming or something where it's severe weather conditions, you might need the equivalent of a tractor to drive across a mountain or something like that. You don't need it on Long Island. Not every day, anyway. And, yeah, as far as trucks, vans, other vehicles that have been around for years, the people driving those, I don't know if you've noticed, if you've taken long-distance trips across this country, the people who drive trucks, for instance, they know what they're doing. They know how to handle the vehicles they're driving. And they're probably the safest drivers on the road. The same training does not go into driving these heavy vehicles. They're too big. That's why they're always flipping over, because people don't know how to handle them. That's why they're always crashing into other vehicles, because, well, you just don't have a sense of reality up there in the sky. And I did a little test over the last couple of days, actually. I wish I had some kind of recording device, like one of those handheld tape recorders, or even a video camera could mount onto my my windshield. I was taking a little poll to see how many motorists really annoyed me by doing something stupid. You know, something stupid like cutting you off or slowing down because they're making a turn without getting into the turning lane, or not turning their brights off, or coming up behind you and being about an inch away from your bumper while you're going 50 miles an hour. Things like that. And I'd say the ratio of times when it was either a minivan or an SUV or just something that's bigger than what should be on the road, I'd say it was about between 7 to 1 and 8 to 1. And that's a phenomenal figure. I mean, yeah, of course, a lot of it is because most people are driving these things anyway. But, I don't know, I just find the attitude changes so much when people get behind the wheels of these things. They're dangerous for that reason alone. Anyway, continuing with this letter, in the time she's had it, the architect with the SUV, which is 2 years, she's had one accident. There was a head-on collision with a Mercedes that came barreling out of a hidden private driveway in Manhasset. Well, they do that over there. That car was totaled. Her Denali required simply that the front bumper be pulled out a little. No one was hurt. Well, okay, that's good, no one was hurt. But apart from the fact it was that person's fault for pulling out of their driveway without looking, look at the facts that you presented yourself. In a collision with a car, and a Mercedes is put together pretty well, too. You know, in a collision with a car like that, your car gets no damage. Your truck gets no damage, that is. The other car is totaled. Now, multiply that by the number of accidents that are going on these days, and you'll see that the people hurting the most are the ones driving the small cars. And it's not because the small cars are dangerous, it's because there are such bigger vehicles out there that are plowing into them. And you add into that untrained drivers who don't know their own strength, and you really have a catastrophe on your hands. Anyway, I bought my wife this vehicle as her wedding present after the accident. I felt I had made the right choice. SUVs are portrayed as being more dangerous. This is not the case. You've made a comment about them doing unpredictable things. The problem that's cited over and over is rollovers. This rumor started when a test driver for Consumer Reports rolled over an Isuzu Trooper during his test. This caused that year's model to be discontinued and the following year's model not to be released. Because of a rumor? I don't think so. Later, the test driver admitted that he was driving in a way that was outside the test parameters and that he attempted to roll over the vehicle. He was successful. I find this kind of science similar to the guy who packed seeds into skulls to try to justify that the white man's cranium was larger than those of African descent. All right, well, let's not go off on a tangent express here. The point is, these things do roll over. I've seen more overturned SUVs than I think anything else I've ever seen. And it doesn't take much, either. A snow flurry, you know, all of a sudden you see an SUV just upside down. No one's hurt. Yeah, people just milling around talking, exchanging information. But how fast could something have gone to flip over like that? You know, it looked like it was going maybe 15, 20 miles an hour, yet it still managed to flip over. Anyway, admittedly, SUVs are not cars. They have more weight and higher center of gravity. If you know this, you drive accordingly and it's not a problem. Aha. If you try to drive it like a Hyundai, you're going to have problems until you apply some common sense. That's the issue here. Apart from the wasting of fuel, you have people who don't know how to drive these things. That's the problem. And I think you should have maybe a different kind of road test for these kinds of things, maybe a different kind of license. And for God's sake, get them off the parkways. There's a reason why they don't put trucks on parkways. I mean, it's annoying when you can't see beyond the car in front of you. You have no idea what the situation is. And most times when I'm driving on parkways or any kind of road, I can't see past the person in front of me. And this is really a problem when you're pulling out of an intersection and there are cars parked on either side. And those cars are actually trucks, SUVs, or even minivans. You can't see what's coming down the road. You can't see if pedestrians are there. You can't see if another car is coming. And I imagine a lot of people have been hurt because of that. Anyway, all the problems you mentioned in comparing European driving with American driving can be corrected by adopting a more Eurocentric system of providing driver's licenses. In New York, you sit through a 5-hour class, take a written test and a 5-minute driving test, and voila, you're certified. In England, it takes over 2 years to get a license. In Germany, it takes that long and costs about $2,500. All through Europe, it's very similar. This is part of the reason why Japan is so against the UN treaty allowing licensed drivers of any member state to drive in other member states. Americans are unqualified drivers. All the common sense guidelines you mentioned, such as double flashing yellow light intersections, rely on the fact that a properly trained driver is behind the wheel. German cars, that is the ones in Germany, don't have cup holders because you should be paying attention to driving, not eating and drinking. I bet they don't have TV sets either. When you drive at 150 miles per hour, that kind of thing is important. I also agree with you that the smart cars should be legal. This goes back to when the automobile company successfully lobbied Congress to pass laws requiring all cars made to have crumple zones. This was spoon-fed to the public in an effort to promote safety. In reality, it has created an automobile industry that makes disposable cars that can't be fixed at the local body shop cheaply, if at all, but instead have to either be totaled, where you go and buy a new car, or else you have to go to the authorized dealer and buy an entire module to replace a portion of your car. Either way, the automobile companies directly benefit, and we, the public, get screwed. It also makes it almost impossible to start a new company, new car company in this country. I don't believe that the smart cars have crumple zones. Of course, that doesn't stop the Segways, but you can't take them on the highway. Not yet, anyway. The only vehicle being sold today without crumple zones is, guess what? The original Hummer H1. Originally custom ordered by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the H2 is a GMC product that actually uses the same frame as the Denali, just with a different body, one with crumple zones. Anyway, I have one last point I'd like to make. On Long Island, I find it ridiculous to bash SUV owners for wasting gasoline when we're surrounded with boats. Do you have any idea how much gasoline boats waste? Thanks for reading this, since most people wouldn't have bothered. Well, I even read it on the air, so there you go. Thanks, Gregor, for that letter. And actually, you know, I think if most drivers were as thoughtful as you, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. But look around you, I think you'll find that a lot of them aren't. All right, so that's our little trip into SUV land. But man, I got to tell you, they just paying attention to how many people were annoying me in the last couple of days. I was amazed. I was so amazed. Should try this. Everyone should try this. Everyone should keep a little log of some sort, or just, you know, inside their head so they don't get distracted. Maybe you're driving along now. See who upsets you first. Okay, the Concorde. Concorde is flying into history this week. The design icon Jet Setter's Dream makes its supersonic swan song this week after a quarter century of flying the rich and rushed across the Atlantic at twice the speed of sound. When three of British Airways' fleet of seven Concordes touched down within minutes of each other at London's Heathrow Airport on Friday, it will mark the end of one of the technological feats of the last century. And I believe the last one is leaving from New York. This may be your last chance to hear the sonic boom, which people don't think you can hear on Long Island. You can. Usually hear it about 8 in the morning or so, and sometimes in the afternoon as it's returning. So if you want to hear that sonic boom, what you do is you go to the British Air site. British Airways? Yeah. And find out the schedule for the Concorde. And add an appropriate amount of time, maybe about 20 minutes or so, from time of takeoff to when you should hear the sonic boom. And you may feel a vibration, but not after Friday. Okay, what else do we have here? Some interesting news. I like to do this. I like to compare the headlines, as we've done in the past. And I did it this morning. Actually, yesterday I did this. CNN has two sites. I'm not sure if you know this, but CNN.com is one site where we all go to. And then they have a little button to click on the international edition, and that's sort of like what the rest of the world reads. And that's if you're interested in what's going on in the world. And it really illustrated itself quite well, I think, yesterday afternoon, yeah, about 6:47 p.m., October 20th. Top story, CNN.com. Kobe Bryant will face sexual assault trial. That's the top story. That's the most important news item in the world. And then they have a few more important items, which I'll read the headlines of. Sniper suspect denies involvement in shootings. Okay. CIA, latest bin Laden tape, likely authentic. Pentagon, deleted parts of General's apology. That's an interesting story right there, but we're not going to get into it right now. Student says he put items on planes in September. That's something we will get to. Robert De Niro, diagnosed with prostate cancer. Report, Diana feared plot to tamper with her brakes. And finally, Alan Alda hospitalized in Chile after emergency surgery. So, a lot of these are basically, you know, celebrity news type of things. Anyway, same moment in time, we switched over to CNN International. And the top story? Israeli airstrikes hammer Gaza. They didn't even mention that on CNN.com. Not even a mention in the top stories, let alone the headline. Kind of important, don't you think? Killing 11 people, wounding more than 100? I don't know, I think that's the most important news item to be looking at. Not Kobe Bryant, who cares? I mean, obviously the people involved care, but why? Why does it matter to so many people? Because the guy's rich. The guy's rich, that's it. That's the only reason people care. Okay, more top stories, CNN International. Bush rebukes Malaysian Prime Minister for the nasty remarks he made about Jews, remember? Well, maybe you didn't if you didn't read the news. CIA bin Laden tapes likely genuine. Okay, we have a repeat. Bryant will face sex assault trial. Okay, the story's there, but it's buried a little bit. Soldier dead in Fallujah attack. That's in Iraq. Yeah, you know, we have soldiers over there, and they're dying every day. Not even, it doesn't even place in CNN.com. Not even up there. Diana letter warned of car plot. Suspect denies being U.S. sniper and doctors feed Blaine after stunt. Okay, well, that's the one silly story that didn't make it into the domestic CNN. But that just goes to show you how much we're missing. But here's a story that you probably didn't miss. A German man, an international story we didn't miss, a German man who taught his dog Adolf to give a Hitler salute by raising his right paw has been charged with violating Germany's anti-Nazi laws. That's according to a Berlin court last Wednesday. Police investigated after members of the public complained they had seen the man giving the stiff arm Hitler salute and telling his dog, Adolf, sit, give me the salute. That's according to a court spokeswoman. As he was questioned by police, the man ordered his black mongrel to give them the Hitler salute as well. Germany has strict laws banning the use of Nazi symbols, but the man, Roland Thein, sporting a Hitler-style mustache and military tunic, said he didn't understand what the fuss was about. Thein demonstrated Adolf's Hitler salute trick to a Reuters photographer in his backyard in southwestern Berlin after summoning the dog from a kennel with Adolf painted over the entrance. Adolf gave me the salute, then Thein barked as the dog raised his right paw. He also said he welcomed the media attention he and his dog were getting. The trial is set for Thursday? Wow. They do things fast over there. He's also accused of shouting the Nazi battle cry, Sieg Heil, in front of Berlin police, and of wearing a Hitler t-shirt and shouting Heil Hitler at a market in the city. And yeah, things are different over there. That kind of stuff is illegal. Different kind of cultural values and things. I don't know, it's a tough one. It really is. Of course, you have a completely different background, completely different history. And you can see why people would be a lot more sensitive over there, but to outlaw people's speech and way of dressing and training their dogs and things like that. Well, I guess we'll be seeing it someday here in other ways, but it's a tough one. And we have this very interesting case here, which I'm sure you've heard of. This has been a top story everywhere. A 20-year-old North Carolina student has admitted to placing box cutters and other suspicious materials aboard two Southwest Airlines planes. The admission came during questioning of the individual by federal authorities in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, this guy is a college student in North Carolina. He's going to face charges now. Yesterday, they said they were going to file charges against him for putting dangerous material aboard airlines and things like that. Never mind the fact, this guy did this six times. Now, the story was being reported very badly because people were saying, yeah, he sent an email concerning the items that were placed on the airplane last week. He sent that email a month ago. And I'm like, what? What doesn't even make sense? Was he predicting the future? How did he know? And obviously there was something they weren't telling us, and that's the fact that he was able to do this a bunch of times in the past. And he alerted the authorities then, too. He sent email. He signed his name. I mean, wow, these guys actually found him. Gold star for them, but this guy wanted to be found. He was telling people about it. The fact that he can six times get on an airplane with box cutters and all kinds of other hazardous material, not be challenged once, write a letter about it, be under investigation, and yet still be able to board an airplane without having any kind of question being raised when he uses his real name. I think he made the point rather well that the security really isn't very secure. And to actually charge this guy with a crime, you should be giving him a medal. I mean, this is the kind of thing that a lot of people suspect, and it takes people with courage to prove it. So, a lot of respect to somebody who's able to do something like that. Okay, shall we move into the pictures for this week? Yes? Okay. www.2600.com/off-the-wall. If you go to where this week's show is either streaming right now or if you're listening to it in the future, the place where you click, you should see a little button that allows you to look at the pictures. And for those of you driving in cars, you can either do this later, or I can describe it as well as I possibly can. And we're going to indicate that the slides or pictures change after the special tone. Is that right?
Mr. Stromberg, is it?
No. No. I think that was the wrong button. Well, that was the wrong button, too, because we're not supposed to use that beep. That's very confusing. Yeah, let's not keep doing it because the phone company gets very upset when they hear that over the air. I think they think people are going to enter calling card numbers or something. We don't want that. So we need an alternate beep for people to know when to change the pictures. That's a face being punched, isn't it? Hear that again. Yeah, that's a face being punched. I know that's not, I mean, that's not really what a face sounds like. I don't know how many people out there have ever punched a face or had their face punched. But I guarantee you it only sounds that way on TV. It's a nice sound, though, isn't it? Wow, I could listen to that all day. Okay, but let's not. Let's move on to the pictures. We're actually going to use this as... Okay. Sure, why not? It's not commercial radio. We can get away with things like this. Okay, so let's go to the first picture. Okay, well, that doesn't mean move. That means move to the first picture, not from the first picture. You don't really need to have the beep the first time. All right? So I assume everybody's at picture number one. This is for the show dated October 21st, 2003, for those of you out in space. And where are we now? Okay, we're this is in Warsaw, which is a big city in Poland, for those of you who don't know. This is where I was in August. Now, what you're looking at there is one of the main streets. I believe it's called Mazurkowska, all right? Something like that. I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong, but it's a big street. This is what it looks like. You see, you have commercial advertisements, Fujifilm on top of buildings. You have a tram line running down the middle. You have cars and buses everywhere. You see that bus over there in the distance. Actually, you can see a bus in the distance, and you can see a tram approaching about the same point. They're all painted orange, and you see these vehicles everywhere. They have a very good mass transit system, I have to say. They and they speed around like crazy. Okay, next slide. This is going to be a tough one. Okay, here we see one of the buses. Now, this is an interesting shot because I think it sort of captured what these buses do. They speed around all over the place. They just move like you would not believe. Buses everywhere. And going at high speeds, taking the turn. I mean, you can see this thing is taking the turn, you know, rather fast. And here's an interesting piece of information. You can't really tell if that's the front of the bus or the back of the bus. Not when you first look at it. When you first look at it, you might think to yourself, you know, it's the front of the bus. It's not. It's the back of the bus. The wheels turn in the back as well. I think that's what they call an articulated bus. That's the one where you have, like, sort of two buses attached to each other. But anyway, that gives you a sense of how the things are constantly speeding around the streets. You have to watch out. You have to be careful. And in Warsaw, I heard more cars screeching to halts than any other city. Actually, once you get into Eastern Europe, once you get into Poland and Russia and Belarus, there's a lot more screeching of brakes. I don't know why that is. Maybe they need to get their brakes oiled or something like that, or maybe they just believe in stopping very fast or something like that. Not really sure. Okay. Here's another shot of basically the same area, but you can see there's a bus, there's a tram, there's another bus, there's cars, and, you know, it's just like, it's mayhem, because these cars are all moving around at high speeds, somehow avoiding each other, somehow avoiding all the different kinds of vehicles that are out there, very fast-paced, and fun to watch. Dangerous to, you know, to be in the midst of, but fun to watch. Okay, this is the biggest building in Warsaw. It's called the Palace of Culture and Science. Now, this was a gift from Stalin. Yeah, a gift from Stalin. You don't turn down a gift from Stalin. And the people of Warsaw did not turn this down. And it was built right in the middle of the city. Everybody hates this building. They refer to it as an eyesore. They refer to it as a scar. And in fact, there's a joke that many people repeat a lot. They go to the top of this building because of the unparalleled view, because of the fact that it's the only place where you can look at Warsaw and not see this building. It's huge. It can withstand a nuclear blast. Well, I think we should take a closer look at it. That's a somewhat closer look. You can see it's just it's very grandiose. You know, they really believed in putting the clock tower up on top and a nice sturdy foundation, big windows everywhere. But it's really it's something that. I don't know. It's at first when you look at it, you think this is a nice looking building, but then when you look at it more, it kind of grows on you in a bad way. Okay, here's getting away from that building for a little while. The entrance to the metro, which is also a pretty efficient running system, nice and modern. Here's something you don't see very often. You certainly don't see it in this country, but a UNICEF store, a UNICEF storefront right there on the street. Yeah, they're into donating and United Nations and all that kind of thing. The only UNICEF visibility I see in this country are the little orange boxes that kids walk around with on Halloween. Kind of sad, but kind of true as well. Is our beep malfunctioning? I think our beep is malfunctioning. Okay, there we go. Okay, I guess there's only so many smacks in that machine. This is a storefront where it gives you an idea of how there is a different language, but it's not necessarily a gulf that can't be bridged. As you can see, the store over there sells alcohol, and they spell it A-L-K-O space H-O-L-E. Alcohol. No mistaking what that is. I'm not quite sure what language that... If that's Polish, how you say alcohol in Polish, or if they're just trying to make it appealing to people who speak English. And the 24H, of course, indicates that the store is open 24 hours. I don't know if you can get alcohol 24 hours, but who knows. Here's a local train in Warsaw. You can see what they look like. There's graffiti on these trains. And look, in the distance, you see it? There's the building, the ugly building. You can see it from everywhere. And, of course, you can see the building again here as we look at Central Station, the Central Train Station for Warsaw. And you see the huge eyesore. But you can really take it all in there, you know. This looks like something that was built a long, long time ago. I think it was built actually in the 50s? 40s? I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when it was built. But it's not as old as it looks. Here we see a street sign which spells Solidarity in Polish. And, of course, Poland being the birthplace of the Solidarity movement, which helped to loosen the grip of the communist regime on the people. Here's a section of the old town. That looks like a painting, doesn't it? What a nice picture, if I do say so myself. That's a huge square, and one of the many buildings that are in Old Town. I should point out that all of Warsaw was completely destroyed in World War II. So when you say Old Town, there's not a lot of the structure really that predates World War II. A lot of it was rebuilt, reconstructed meticulously, and it gives you an example here of just what a good job they did. I did a very bad job as far as, having that huge square there, I cut off the top of the building. So there, we'll make up for it by showing the top of the building there. And you can see a good part of the sky, too. Here's another view of the old town. You can see little cafes out on the street, people walking around, the huge spaces where people can just sort of mill, which I think is really cool. And you see that a lot in Eastern Europe with their old town section. And, of course, the architecture is really nice. The apartments there, people painting pictures in the street. It brings back such memories. And, of course, when you're walking down the street, sometimes you encounter an entire regiment of soldiers. This was a bit of a surprise to me. I just turned the corner, and all of a sudden there's a marching battalion there, and I wasn't sure what all the fuss was about. These guys are like, ready for battle, as you can see. The rifles pointed straight up in the air, or those bayonets, I'm not really sure. Turns out that this was August 13th? I believe that says August 13th. And it was some kind of an anniversary of something that happened in 1944. I didn't really ask around to find out what it was. But obviously it was something war-related, and everybody was there saluting and clapping and whatever else you do at events like that. Here's a phone booth, a Polish phone booth, which is obvious because it says telephone on it. In fact, if you look very carefully, you can see a reflection of me taking that picture. Wow, look at that. And also a picture of a missing person. I think that's a missing person on the telephone booth. This was right outside a military base. The person might have gone AWOL or something. Not really sure. Here's a close-up of another payphone. You can see various emergency numbers on the lower right. Payphones in quite a few places in Warsaw. Another view of Old Town, the cobblestone streets, tourists milling around. And yes, that is a bottle of beer walking down the street. A life-size, well, more than life-size, a bigger-than-human-size bottle of beer was casually walking down the street. You see things like that where you're just sort of, walking around, and suddenly you see some bizarre spectacle of someone advertising some product. And this guy was just, walking around as a beer bottle and not really bothering anybody, and people just walking past him and or her. And it was all kind of nice. Okay, here we see one of the squares inside, I believe it was a castle. You can see some really interesting plant life as well. And people just sort of come here, mill around. You know, you see couples holding hands, things like that. It's the romantic place to go in old Warsaw. Another picture of a payphone with a bus behind it. So you get two of the themes for tonight, buses and payphones together. Okay, this guy, I wasn't sure who this was, so I just took his picture just to capture it and figure it out later. I thought maybe that was the Pope at first, because as you know, the Pope comes from Poland, and they have streets named after him and statues everywhere. But this guy's name is Stefan Wyszynski, and turns out he is the chief primate of Poland. Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing to be. He was born in 1901, and he died in 1981. He was the chief primate of Poland. It's a title, okay? And his claim to fame in the mid-60s, together with the Polish Episcopate, he made a gesture of reconciliation between the Polish and the German nation, addressed to the German bishops. This caused a hostile and violent reaction of the party and state authorities. Member of the Vatican Congregation of the Clergy and the Commission for the Revision of Canon Law Code, he took part in the proceedings of the Second Vatican Council. And he played a major role in the election of Karol Wojtyla to the papacy. That's Pope John Paul's real name. 1980-81, he acted as a broker between the Solidarity Movement and the communist authorities. So you can see the title of chief primate is certainly well-deserved. That's a statue that was in the streets of Warsaw. And we're ready for our next picture here. We're going to read this. This is at the base of that ugly building, the Palace of Culture and Science. They had this in different languages. This was in English. The opening ceremony of the Palace of Culture and Science was held on August 21st, 1955, after three-year process of building, designed by the team of architects supervised by a Russian engineer, Mr. Lou Redeniu. The palace, meant as a gift from the nations of Soviet Union to the Polish society, occupies the area of 3.3 hectares near Złota and Chmielia Street, originally covered by dwelling houses destroyed during the World War II. The interiors of the palace are multifunctional indeed. Theaters, cinemas, and concert halls of total capacity of about 6,000 seats cover 154,000 square meters. Exhibition halls of 10,000 square meters capacity make it the biggest exhibition hall park in Poland. And that is not all. Museums, Palace of Youth, and over 100 other institutions of different kind have also sheltered in the palace. The palace still remains the highest and the biggest building in Poland, 231 meters of height and 817.000m3 of capacity. Among 28 lifts available in the Palace of Culture, as many as 13 work on high stories. Made in Soviet Union and originally installed in 1955, the old lifts were replaced in 90s and with modern devices made in Western Europe. Elevators arriving at XXX floor of the palace. I think they were supposed to fill that in. I don't know if they that was a mistake there. Elevators arriving at XXX floor of the palace are the fastest devices of this kind in Poland. Their speed is 6 meters per second. An upward trip to the view terrace is now reduced to less than 20 seconds. And that little placard is dated May of 2000. So that's a fairly recent thing there. That's what you see when you enter the building there. And here's a view from the top. You can see way down there, yeah, all kinds of buildings and people and cars and streets and things like that. This beep machine really is giving us trouble today. Here's another view. You can see one of the bridges there. Way off in the distance, you can see a smokestack, and that's a really, really, really big smokestack that would be the dominant site were it not for this ugly building. Here's a major intersection. That's between that street I mentioned before, which Mark Zadkowska, whatever, and something beginning with a J, okay? And that gives you an idea of how difficult it is to cross the street. You have to use an underground passageway to do that, but it's just huge. Huge intersection there. A lot of traffic, a lot of cars, a lot of people. Another Thank you. Another view of apartment buildings and parks and things like that in the other direction. And I look down at parks and buildings, buses, things like that. And this is what it looks like on the top of the building. This is the inside of the building. There's graffiti in some places. And, oh boy, this gives me a headache just looking at. This is, because we're on our way to the next place, which we'll do next time we do pictures, and that is Kaliningrad, that little part of Russia that isn't attached to Russia. It's right there in the middle of the Baltics. Anyway, I had to take a bus to get there, and I had to go to the bus station to get the bus ticket, and this is what the bus schedule looks like on the wall. I don't know how they ever change anything there, because it's not one of the kinds that changes automatically. Looks like those refrigerator magnets, you know, where you spell things out. That's what it looks like they do here. So I imagine you have to go up and make changes manually. Here's a view of the entire thing with all the people and mayhem that goes on in the bus station. And believe me, it's mayhem like you have never seen before, especially if you don't know the language. And that mayhem translates outside, too, where all the buses, minibuses, cars, vans, people, just all packed together. And somehow managing to make buses leave on time and get to where they're supposed to go. And next to all of that, I noticed this as I was walking around the bus station. All of a sudden, everyone's starting to speak Chinese. I'm in the middle of Poland, and all of a sudden, there's Chinese people all around. It turns out there's a marketplace attached to the bus station that's Chinese in nature, and it's completely packed, and it's just one of the quintessential hectic marketplaces where people are selling, you know, all kinds of animals and food and equipment and things like that. So that's I didn't take pictures of there because I was afraid that you know, I might offend somebody by taking pictures, but believe me, that's all attached. And this is the last picture. This is the bus. The bus to Kaliningrad. The bus to more mysteries of the East. And we'll share some of those mysteries with you next time we show pictures. Well, we don't really have time for... I know some people were calling in. We don't really have time for phone calls. However, next week, we're going to have time for a lot of phone calls because we're doing the fall fundraiser next week. Now, it's interesting because the fall fundraiser here is not as big as the fall fundraiser, or the spring fundraiser, that is, which took place, I believe, in the spring. This will be going on for, I believe, a week, maybe two. And we encourage people to take part in it and help us out, because the goal really isn't all that much. It's basically to make up for a shortfall from the spring fundraiser. I believe it's only about $10,000. Now, on the other radio station, $10,000 can be raised in a couple of hours. You know, some shows are able to raise that kind of money. Certainly within a day. Now, we're giving ourselves over a week here, I believe. So, if you really want to make a difference and want to help this place out, then consider being a part of it next week. But you have to listen live. It's very hard to pledge if you're listening sometime in the future. So, hopefully, people can be a part of that. So, that's next week at this time. We'll be doing fundraising here on Off the Wall. And we look forward to your participation then. Our email address, otw@2600.com. We look forward to your cards, letters, whatever else you can send to the Internet, and any other opinions, news articles, whatever you think we should be covering here on this radio program. Another program, a reminder, Off the Hook is not on for the next 2 weeks on the other radio station. But again, we will be back next week with our special fundraising edition, and hopefully you'll be there too. And we'll have all kinds of other surprises. Stay tuned for the blues here on WUSB in Stony Brook.
Written today is a power. Ideas, elements, imagination.
I'm at the Fur Peaks Ranch right now, but when I'm in Long Island, I listen to WUSB out of Stony Brook.